Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
Yeah, I saw that bird get a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and looked back, and that's when I saw it. I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
1957, a man of the cloth found claw marks on an old church door. The newspaper said they'd been made by a dog. He'd have had to stood 7'4". In 1967, a van load of hippies told a park ranger named Quinlan they'd been awakened in the night by a scratch at the window. There was a dog man looking in and grinning. In 77, there were screams in the night near the village of Belair. Could have been a bobcat, could have been the wind. Nobody looked up there. Then in the summer of 87, near Luther, it happened again. At a cabin in the woods, it looked like maybe someone had tried to break in. There were cuts around the doors that could only been made by very sharp teeth and claws. He didn't wear shoes because he didn't have feet. He walked on just two paws. So far this year, no stories have appeared. Have the dogmen gone away? Have they disappeared? Soon enough, I guess we'll know, because this is the time to fear. For another 10 years has come around. The 7th year is here. And somewhere in the North Woods darkness, a creature walks upright. And the best advice you may ever get
to Monster X Radio, Sunday, August 31st, 2014. Hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. I'm Johnny Bigfoot, and with me tonight is Crystal.
Hello.
Gunner was at Bigfoot Days in Willow Creek yesterday and is taking a trip to the infamous Patterson-Gimlin site in Bluff Creek as we speak, so he won't be joining us this evening. So let's start off with some Bigfoot news, and then we'll welcome our guest of the evening. See, the short film Eve, which was based on a book by J.M. Bailey, was just released at Bigfoot Days yesterday.
Oh, so did they preview or premiere it there, like play it somewhere?
I don't know. That's
a good question.
It's about a 20-minute short film, which they plan on making a full-length feature of. Did you get a chance to see it?
I saw a little bit of it, yes. I did.
I thought it was well done.
Yeah, it was. It was funny because while I was watching, I happened to be listening to the music, because I remember the guy who visited the show before was talking about how the other man was busy scoring it, so I was listening a little to the music.
Nice. Yeah, it was good. It was different.
Yeah, it was. No, it looked really neat. I'm still interested in the books.
Yeah, that's right. I have Eve and then Iron Mountain Ridge.
And then is there a third in the works?
Yep, there is a third in the works. And I guess
and that brings it full circle.
Yeah, her and Gunner had a booth at Bigfoot Days in Willow Creek yesterday, and looks like they had a lot of fun.
Oh, they shared?
Yep.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah, and then Steven Strufert runs that Willow Books, Bigfoot bookstore. So he was down there hanging out with them, and then apparently they all talked, and now they're going to the Patterson-Gimlin site today.
Mm-hmm. So they were close by. Bigfoot Books is close by to where the event was held?
I'm guessing so, yeah. Because
okay.
Willow Creek's not a big place. I've never been there, but it's pretty small.
Okay.
And that would be cool to go to see the site.
Yeah, the site seems pretty well plotted out. There doesn't seem to be much question of whether or not it's the true location. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
correct?
Some things have changed, I think, as far as landscape and topography, but
they've found
nobody knows that place like Steven does. Yeah, he probably knows the exact spot where Patty walked and.
Well, that would be neat. And,
yeah. And then
it's historic Bigfoot.
Yep, it definitely is. That's the Mecca.
Yeah.
And then we have Bill Brock's show, Monsters Underground, has been moved from Destination America to the Discovery Channel and will debut September 4th at 10 p.m. Eastern.
So the premiere episode did not air? Wasn't
nope.
it supposed to air on a Friday or something last week?
Yep.
Oh, and it didn't. Okay.
Nope, and he's also going to be at the Skunk Ape Conference with Stacy Brown next month. It looks like an interesting show. It's, you know, more entertainment.
Right. You know, Bill Brock is a pretty cool guy. I don't know him well, and he seems to, you know, take breaks from the public for a while, and obviously this last time it was for quite a few months, and you know, you see he was busy working on some stuff, but I met him when I was fairly new, and he seemed very open to, you know, helping out and anything that anybody needed. He seems like a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, he's cool. They do some good YouTube videos, him and his sidekick. And I guess that's how he got noticed for the show, was through his YouTube videos.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah, they're up there in Maine, is it?
I think so. You
yeah,
know,
that's
I'm
pretty cool.
Old school. I don't even realize that people, you know, scout through YouTube. That's so funny. Oh.
Yeah.
But it's neat, I guess, if you're in a position to be noticed or, you know, recognized for your abilities or what have you, then fine.
Yeah, he has a good spirit about him. It should be an interesting show. He's the head of the expedition, and
right,
sure
yeah, I
episodes,
saw that, and they
but
had quite a few different personalities on board, maybe a scientist and an expert tracker and, you know, another type personality.
And then, did you see the skateboarder and Jackass star Bam Margera just made a video about hunting for Bigfoot?
I did see it, and I love him. I love Jackass, and I was a big fan of him anyhow because I'm from PA, but more so than him, I was a fan of his parents, April and Phil, because I felt so bad for them. Did you ever watch Jackass when he would just run in on
yeah.
his dad, sound asleep, and just start beating the shit out of him? It's so rude and so mean, but they were, oh, his parents put up with a lot.
That's right,
him.
He had his own spin-off show of that too, didn't he? Bam's World, or what was that?
Yes, something like that. He did. Everybody went their own separate ways. There was Wild Boys, which I enjoyed. That was Steve-O and the Chris Pontius or whatever his name was. They went out into the wilds of different jungles and different places and did animal shows, and it was really cool. It was a different spin on, you know, nature shows.
Yeah, they.
So is he?
They
going,
put the parents through hell.
They did. They completely ruined homes of theirs, vehicles of theirs, everything of theirs, and then, you know, nitpicked with them in the meantime, as if they hadn't put them through enough. But they, you know, they were always kind of easygoing about it. I don't think I would have been, but. They were pretty cool people. Is he going to continue? It did say to be continued. Do you think that he's going to continue on in pursuit of Bigfoot?
Yeah, that's part one, so I'm guessing there's going to be a part two.
I wonder how serious they are, because obviously they're goofy guys in the meantime. I wonder if they are making fun of or actually believe something's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It kind of seems like they're, you know, making fun, but at the same time...
They could believe.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
And then it was just announced today that Les Stroud will be doing 6 more brand new Survivor Man Bigfoot episodes.
No way.
Yep.
Any word on who he's... pairing up with?
I'm not sure if it's going to be with the Muppet Man Todd or not yet.
Well, maybe he'll make some new friends to hang out with in the Bigfoot community, get a taste of the many different personality types and research methods that are out there. I think that's only fair.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I would think he was going to continue with Todd, though.
Really?
It's just they already have this, you know, track record of researching together. They're in an area that, you know, supposedly has had activity, and I could see it. I don't know, but that's just... Because I thought Meldrum... I thought Meldrum had said... hinted at a while back that he was going to be involved with more. So I'm,
that would make
I would
it
think Meldrum's going to be in there.
You do or
yeah.
don't? Oh, you do.
I think Meldrum's going to be in there, and I have a hunch standing as two, but who knows? We'll find out.
I'd like to see, you know, like, I'd like to see a bunch of different personalities, you know, show him, not show him, but, you know, take him out and show them the different ways they do things. I'm not a fan
of just
watching one, like Finding Bigfoot, watching one set method week after week after week. Now, granted, they move around, but I think it would be more interesting to see them not only move around, but try... different researchers' methods and things like that.
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be some new flavors added to the mix.
Yeah.
So for these stories and more, you can visit the Bigfoot Research and News blog at bigfootresearch.blogspot.com. And now we'll introduce our guest for the evening. Our guest tonight has quite the cryptid resume. She is an author, investigator, and an artist. She does a lot of artwork that you'll see in her books. She's a frequent guest on national TV and radio shows, including Monster Quest, Monsters and Mysteries, Inside Edition, Coast to Coast Radio, which she was just on the other night, NPR, Monster X Radio, and many more. She also has a new book that was just released entitled American Monsters. History of Monster Lore, Legends, and Sightings in America. When she was a journalist, she was the first to break the chilling story of the werewolf-like creature that was said to lurk in farms and forests of southern Wisconsin, thus coining the term the Beast of Bray Road. Please welcome Linda Godfrey to the show. Hey, Linda.
Hello there. How's the sound? You guys sound a little bubbly.
Hi.
Sound okay on my end? Hi.
You sound fine to me.
Oh, okay. There's just some strange bubbly sounds in the background that I'm hearing. So if you're good on your end, that's great. But thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I hear that a little bit, too. I'm not sure. Do you have your speakers on, Crystal?
Nope.
Okay. So, Linda, what's up? It's been almost a year since we last talked with you.
No, it can't have been that long. But if you say so, it must have been.
Yeah, but I know you have some new developments and investigations you've been dealing with. Maybe you could start off by telling us a little bit about some of those. I know you went to a house and investigated a dog man sighting and tracks in the mulch and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was just a little over a month ago, something like that, I believe. And it was one that was easy for me to get to because it's in Heartland, Wisconsin, which is about an hour from my house. And, you know, there's no excuse for me not to go someplace that close. And I like to always make it clear that I'm not a person to go charging off into the woods with a rifle just looking for cryptids. I mean, usually that doesn't net you very much in my experience, you know, and in the case of others. But when somebody calls you into a location, it's a place I can get to. It's recent enough that there's still likely to be evidence. I'm all up for going. And I've been there a couple of times, even did a late-night stakeout one of the evenings. And it's kind of an amazing situation there. And if people are curious, they can go to my blog, lindagodfrey.com, unless you've got this posted. But the witness made a great sketch. And if you see the sketch, you'll notice it doesn't have any eyes because the eyes were shaded somehow. She couldn't see any eyes, so she just, rather than trying to make something up, she left it off the sketch, which to my mind is a sign of a good witness. And she's a middle-aged professional lady, married. Her husband's a businessman, too, so they wanted to stay anonymous because they thought it might adversely affect their business if they were discovered telling anybody that they'd seen, that she had, at least had seen this what looks like a dog man to me in the drawing. You know, it's pretty clear. But it happened on a summer night this year. Was not a full moon, but a fairly, I think it was like a half moon, and a fairly bright night. They have lots of neighbors. This is a residential area. This is not out in the country or some lonely place. It's a regular neighborhood where the backyards butt up against one another, and a lot of people leave their patio lights on at night. And so she got awakened at 1:30 a.m. by her little dog and thought it wanted to go out to go to the bathroom. So she took it back on the deck, and it would not go out on the yard. It just whimpered and crawled behind her. And so she's crouching and looking to see, and then she sees this thing come striding across the lot line between her line and a lot of the neighbors right behind them. It came out from a slightly wooded little area that was on the previous lot line. And she said it just walked in big strides right across the back. And they have kind of flower beds planted with mulch back there. Can you guys still hear me all right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Just checking. I've been having problems on radio shows that I've been on lately. And so I'm always making sure that things are still going well. So anyway, to get back to where we were, she's looking at this thing in amazement, and she knows it's really tall because it passes right under this kind of fork on a tree that she knows is a foot or two taller than her, and it just walking along like it doesn't care, and then all of a sudden it turns its head and looks directly at her. And that's when she kind of lost it. You know, she started like, she was crouched on the deck, and she started kind of crouch walking backwards and dragging the dog. And the creature just kept going. She said it was like, you know, it didn't care in the least if I saw it or if I knew it was there. It just did, you know, it had its business, and it kept going. And it continued on into kind of a slightly wooded area at the end of the block that if it came out on the other side, it would be right in line to shoot down to the nearby freeway, 16. And that's got a real wide, deep ditch with that rides up to woods, so it could get anywhere from there. And it's a very, very lakey, woodsy area, just northwest of Milwaukee. And they call it the Land O'Lakes because it's just, it looks like God took all of his 10 fingers and pushed in that spot at the same time, you know, where the little lakes popped up, and there's almost more lakes than land in this area. So it's perfect creature habitat. But the terrifying thing was that she said she realized she has a special needs daughter whose bedroom is in the front of the house, not even the back of the house. And she said that for the last month, her daughter had been saying every night, "Mommy, there's a monster. I saw a monster looking in my window at me." And when I walked around the house to look under her bedroom window, there were these footprints that were for mulch. They were pretty good because whatever it was so heavy that it kind of went straight. The footprint went straight down every time it took a step, and so they were deeper, almost into the subsoil. It wasn't just like something on the top layer of mulch. Mulch is never the greatest thing for a footprint. Believe me, I've tried taking plaster prints of mulch, and they don't generally work out too well. But these were quite discernible. They were identical to the ones we saw in the back of the yard, and at my best estimate, they represented a canine-like footprint that was about 4 to 5 inches in diameter, which is pretty big. And of course, you have distortion with the mulch. You can't rely exactly, but that was my best guess from looking at it. The eerie thing was that it appeared that it had been the left leg was pivoting, was in place, and then it used its right foot to sort of pivot to get the best angle to where it could see the child in her bed. And they weren't human footprints. They were not long enough. They would have been quite different. I tried making a footprint and was jumping and couldn't do it. You know, it was something that had some heft to it that did this. And a couple of days later, she found what looked like a handprint about 4 feet up on the siding on the other side of the house. And there's a picture of that on the LindaGodfrey.com blog, too. So, you know, it's just one of these really baffling cases where you wonder why it's walking through this neighborhood. Well, there actually was a reason. There were also very deep, well-imprinted deer prints. There were obviously deer prints going along the backyard mulch. And so I think the deer were following the lot lines, eating the plants as they went. And this thing had caught on to the fact that it had become a deer path and was probably following those deer.
So is this in an area where there have been dogman sightings before?
Well, not in that neighborhood per se, but this is less than half an hour south of the Holy Hill area where you'll remember there was a real famous case where the man contracting for the DNR picked up a deer, threw it in his truck before he could take off. Something with an upright wolf-like head that was standing upright and had a wolf-like head reached in and stole the deer out of the back of his truck. That was nearby. Yeah. And I've had other, from that whole area around Holy Hill, Hubertus, which is just a little farther northwest of Milwaukee than Heartland, I've had lots of dogman sightings. So it's well within the area that... That's fairly close to the edges of the Kettle Moraine State Forest starts around Whitewater and goes northeast in Wisconsin, kind of way up north of Milwaukee. And there are lots of kettle areas outside the state forest, too. You know, it's not like the state forest was able to draw a line and get every single kettle, because a lot of those had already been made into neighborhoods and developments and all that kind of thing. So there's lots and lots of that type land formation around there as well.
Hmm. Holy Hill. Oh, that's the Steve Kruger story. Yeah, that is.
Right.
That's quite the story, and it's interesting how you've made the correlation in some of your books to how these dogman sightings, you know, you'll look in to see place names of the areas, you know, for cemeteries
right.
and Holy Hill and things like that.
Right. Yeah, and that hill actually was sacred to the Native Americans. There are river valleys around below it. It's a quite a tall hill, and it originally was a sacred place to the Native Americans, and then when the settlers came, there was a hermit that lived up there, and it became known as Hermit Hill. And there were also legends of the local goat man that was supposed to prowl around the area. And once the Catholic shrine went up, if anybody sees a picture of it, if you want to look up a picture of it, it's got twin spires that are lighted up at night, and they light this whole valley. It's a really unusual and beautiful place, but also strangely wild around the base of it, you know, where you've got all these intersecting rivers and these very old roads that are now turned into residential roads, like Hogsback Hill and Hogback Road and various other really strange sounding names like that. So yeah, it's and Heartland is not that far south of that area.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a very interesting encounter. He almost made it sound like a bear dog, kind of, huh? He said it wasn't a bear and it wasn't a wolf, but...
Well, he said the head looked like a wolf. And this is kind of interesting, too, because there's another correlation with the Heartland sighting. What Steve said was that the head looked like a wolf. You know, it was not. He looked at it, and yet body seemed too thick for a wolf, because he said it had such a burly chest, and the arm reaching in had muscles on the upper arm that, you know, he wouldn't be used to seeing on a canine. So he kind of picked up the idea of the bear wolf, which originally came from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I think maybe just sort of an adaptation or another subspecies. But he said it was definitely canine. It had claws. It was reaching for this deer with the claws when he saw it. And the thing is that with the Heartland case, this creature also had very, very noticeable bulk in its chest and its arms. Not shoulders, because, you know, canines don't really have shoulders, but in its upper forelimbs and in the chest. In fact, when she first saw it, because this creature was a light gray, she thought maybe it was somebody wearing a very thick gray fur jacket, which struck her as odd because it was a summer, nice warm summer night, you know. And then she realized, she saw its head and then the rest of it, and walking on canine legs, and she realized it was no human in a jacket. But it had that same sort of unexpected burliness about the chest and the upper limbs.
Hmm. Were you able to find any correlations of place names or cemeteries or anything in that area?
In Heartland?
Yeah.
Not right. Well, there are lots and lots of things in that area. It was originally, most of it was sacred area to the Native Americans. There was lots of mound building going on there. There's Lizard Mound Park, which is not very far from there. And that is a place that has some wonderful representations of ancient effigy mounds, animal-shaped effigy mounds. And not many people realize, this is just a mind-blowing statement, not many people realize this, but Wisconsin actually has, I think the figure I've read is something like 96% of all the ancient animal-shaped effigy mounds in the world, which is
wow.
Really amazing. And most of them are in the southern half of Wisconsin. there were so many when the very first settlers began coming, you know, before they started plowing them under and, you know, raising them to make cities. There were so many that in many places, especially wherever there were certain types of water, lakesides, that sort of thing, it almost looked like the land had been terraformed. It was almost like a giant sculpture park in many places with these strange animals. And the weird thing is, you really can't see the shapes unless you're up above. If you're just walking through, they're not high. They're maybe 3, maybe at the most 4. A lot of them are as low as 2 feet high. And yet the edges are very sharp. They're very carefully planned. You know, they're sophisticated, somewhat abstract representations of various species that you can still recognize. And some have burials and some don't. Whereas the round cone-shaped mounds more often have burials than these. But Lizard Mound Park is not very far, and there are lots of other areas with spectacular mound effigy groups all around that northern Milwaukee and north of Milwaukee area.
Hmm. Wow. That's interesting. So that's been the main case you've been working on. Is there any other cases or any action on Bray Road lately?
Well, that's the main, I'll say that's the most recent case that I've been out and physically investigated, but I'm always looking at things, and anybody who's read my new book knows they're not always dogmen. There has been a little bit of stuff going on in the vicinity of Bray Road, not on Bray Road itself. There was a sighting kind of out in that area in February where a farmer was out in his field, in a sealed shed, I should say. If he was in the field, he would have frozen to death because it was February and it was like 20 below zero. But it was 3 a.m., and he was working late on some machinery or something that he needed to get done, as farmers often do. And all of a sudden, his animal just started going crazy. And he stepped out the door and looked, and tearing through the backfield behind his shed, first of all, he sees this coyote coming lickety-split at a dead run as fast as it can go. And chasing it on two legs was an upright dogman-like creature with shaggy, long, dark fur, again, on hind legs. And it was totally keeping up with this coyote on four legs, if not gaining on it. And it chased it into the woods. So, and this guy, this particular witness, was a total non-believer in the whole Beast of Bray Road phenomenon, but he's changed his mind since then.
Yeah, because that area is a lot of farms, huh? And you'd think if anyone would have odds of seeing this creature, it would be people that live around there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, he'd lived there for decades and had never seen it. And there are some people on the road who have, and probably more that haven't. Most of the people who see it are those who are just driving along and it runs across the road in front of them, or they see it by the side of the road getting roadkill or whatever. You know, they're very sporadic. They're really pretty rare. I think probably thousands of people drive down Bray Road every year hoping to see the beast, and almost none of them do. You know, it's not like, and I keep saying, it's not like you go to Disney World and you can expect all the Disney characters to be standing there waving at you. It's really a rare thing. And I've spent my share of time there and have never seen it on Bray Road myself. So,
yeah, you live in Elkhorn, right?
I live near there. I'm not right. In Elkhorn, but I'm near there. So it's kind of an enigma, you know, as to why anything would hang out there. And the thing is, on Bray Road, I have not been able to find any evidence of old burial grounds or effigy mounds or anything really at all. There's only a very small creek that kind of trickles through one end. It's not like a large natural springs or anything that would normally attract, you know, that kind of effigy mound. Geographical or geological formations of any type that I can see. The closest I can come is that it may have been part of a lake-to-lake trail pre-settler times between Sullivan Lake and going on up to where Near East Troy is. And that's about the closest I can come to any unusual features of it at all. And it's not a big, deep wilderness. You know, people will write me and say, well, you know, where can I go camp on Bray Road? And I have to tell them, I'm sorry, you can't. It's farms, you know, it's farmland. It doesn't, there's no wilderness. You have to go to the DNR site and just, you know, pick some area nearby campground and do that instead. But you can't camp there. I've had people call me and say they were going to come and go hunt the Beast of Bray Road, and I have to explain that, for one thing, it's kind of, we don't know what it is, really. We have no idea what it is. I don't, anyway. And when you don't know what something is, it's really not a good idea to shoot it. There have been hoaxes that people have tried to perpetrate on Bray Road. I know of at least three where people have gone out in a bear suit, or three, a Halloween mask. And I'm sure if I know about three, there are probably more. So you could be shooting a human being and then you're up for murder. It could also just be a natural gray wolf. I have had people tell me they have seen the eastern gray wolf on Bray Road, where they were sure that it was just that animal. And if you shoot a wolf without a permit in wolf season, that's huge fines, you know, and not good either. So I pretty much discourage that kind of thing and try and advise people, really, if this is a natural animal and predator, if it is some sort of adapted wolf, which there's no reason it couldn't be that, quadrupeds can run on their hind legs and do so if they're motivated or out of necessity, if they injure a forelimb or something like that. So if it is that, you know, it's just none of that's going to turn out well. Put it that way.
Yeah, I just read that in Real Wolfmen. I'm finishing that up, and you'd mentioned that in one of the last chapters. Be careful what you're hunting for.
Right, exactly. And I personally don't go hunting literally with guns. You know, I just I don't do that. As I tried to explain earlier, I cannot emphasize that enough. And I don't take people out hunting for monsters. I investigate quietly when somebody calls me to a scene to see what we can find out and make any recommendations and see if there's some evidence to help us with our knowledge base, you know, and that's about it. And that really is as much time as I could give to it. You know, maybe there are other people who do more, but it's just not my way.
So the eastern gray wolf has made it that far south in Wisconsin now?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have DNR verified cougars. In fact, it was one in my own backyard last October, almost got my husband, literally.
Really?
Oh, yeah, and there have been verified wolf sightings, and I even found some really, really odd scat in one of the kettles not far from where I live, and took excellent, really good pictures and sent it to a tracking expert via the State Department of Natural Resources, and it came back positive for elk. Now, and they were really surprised. They said, do you have elk in your area? And I said, well, not for 100 years. You know, there used to be. So it's kind of like everything is coming back. And it appears that the cougars and maybe some of the wolves are coming from Minnesota, and then they somehow make it over to the Lake Michigan shoreline and then follow down around Lake Michigan and up into Michigan and then up toward the East Coast, where they're also seeing more of these animals. And a lot of people say, well, it's because we're building so much that it's pushing them out of their natural habitat. But actually, in some places, the reverse is sort of true. In northern Wisconsin, around the turn of the last century, most of the north woods were clear cut. You know, the lumber people went up there and just wholeheartedly mowed that place down. And that's when a lot of these species were driven up into Canada and northern Minnesota, where it was harder to log year-round. And now they've been replanted. There was a huge, you know, during the Depression, the Civilian Conservation Corps was replanting all of these trees. And now you can drive up north and it's solid woods again. So I'm thinking that a lot of these animals are probably just finding their way back into their old normal habitat and then kind of branching out and exploring from there.
Yeah, because weren't most of the wolves driven to extinction in Wisconsin in the mid-1800s?
Yeah. You're exactly right, yeah. Yeah, they were just hunted out of existence here, and it was very, very contentious when the DNR started bringing them back. It still is, actually, up north, but the fact is there already were some there, and the same thing's been going on, like, in the UP and Michigan and some of the other states. So it is entirely possible that most of the sightings reports that I receive are of wolves that have some sort of adaptation that allows them to run and walk upright. Again, they don't usually do anything supernatural in the sightings. They have the normal yellow, greenish, goldish eye shine that canines, dogs, and wolves both have. They don't normally show themselves, you know, sprinkling pixie dust or sprouting wings or fading in and out or anything like that. They seem normal and solid and just, either chasing deer or picking up roadkill, kind of going about their business. The one odd thing is that people who are sort of close enough to see their faces and get a good look at their expressions often have this uncanny sense that they're more intelligent than other animals. They're not seeing any human in there, but they're saying it just looked like it was aware of me and it didn't want me to come any closer. It wanted me to know it could jump on my car. It wanted me to know it was superior to me, that kind of thing, which is not usually what you hear from somebody who runs into, say, a bear, you know, out in the woods. When's the last time you heard anybody say, well, this bear was coming at me, and, yeah, I had the feeling that it wanted me to know it was superior to me. You know, that just sounds really weird if you're saying something like that about a normal animal. So it does seem like there's something a little different about these things. But
people like to say, well, maybe you're seeing a wolf or maybe you're seeing a bear. But most of the wolves and bears are in northern Wisconsin. It's kind of a rare thing, huh, to be in southern Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's still much more unusual. I mean, my dad is from Phillips, which is up in Price County, and I spent a lot of my childhood summers wandering around in the woods. And I mean, they're in the deep woods. They're way out on a little lake, the family farm, which he had a cabin on. And so, I mean, there were times when, I mean, you would just always see the bear droppings. They would be on the lawn under the apple trees. I've had a bear between me and the house. You know, it's just a different sort of behavior. But there are still lots of them up there. And now they're just starting to come down. I think every year somebody in Madison will report that there's a bear in the tree in their backyard. And here's the other interesting difference between bears and wolves and cougars and the man wolves and Bigfoot is that if you get, say, a bear climbs a tree in your backyard in Madison, Wisconsin, all three news channels will be there, and they'll get footage, and they'll get pictures. And you can tranquilize the bear. A lot of times that happens, and, you know, they'll watch it falling out of the tree or whatever. And they're not camera shy. You can get pictures of them. This is the thing that's anybody involved in looking for the upright wolf-like creatures or Bigfoot is that nobody yet has that completely clear final proof photograph that people everywhere around the world can look at and say, oh man, yep, that's it. Now we know they're real. There they are. You know, there it is. You can't deny that. You know, that one, that just hasn't happened yet. So what is it about these other creatures that makes them so elusive and so very, very camera shy when the other things don't seem to care?
Yeah, that's true. Because you get a few Bigfoot sightings down there as well. You know, you people that say, well, Dogman, it could just be a different looking Bigfoot. It could be a different type of Bigfoot.
Well, I've heard that, but then you have to be willing to say, well, primates and canines are pretty much the same thing, which if you know anything about their body form, you know cannot really be true. And anybody who gets a really good look, now I've had right from day one back in 22 years ago when this all began, in 1992, as soon as people started coming to me with the Dogman reports, they were also coming to me with Bigfoot reports. And it was a little hard at first for me because I was a complete newbie to the field to tell for sure what they were talking about. Now I can go back and with a lot more certainty say, oh, well, yeah, that was probably a Dogman or that, you know, really maybe was a Bigfoot. But when they get a good look, people that see the Dogman, you know, just like this recent one in Heartland, they'll notice there's a pronounced muzzle with fangs. There will be visible ears, usually pointed, set on top of the head. There's that definite neck, sometimes with a little ruff on it. There is a very different body shape. It's much leaner. Most people who try and estimate the weight of the Dogman will say between maybe 150 and 200, 250 pounds at the most, whereas with Bigfoot, it's usually 300 to, you know, all the way up to 800 I've seen estimates of. So the Bigfoot are much, much, much bulkier. Also.
And taller.
Yeah, way taller usually. I mean, the Dogman is usually estimated at around 6 to 7 feet. Or sometimes as low as 5, sometimes around 7, but usually between 6 and 7, somewhere around there. And, in fact, the one in Heartland, I was able to measure the exact length, height from the ground to where the woman saw this creature pass under in her yard, and it was 6 feet, and it was slightly hunched. But the big thing is, if they get a good look at the feet, that clinches it, because Bigfoot walks with its feet planted flat on the ground. It's called plantigrade. Like humans, you know, and other primates, the knees flex forward. Its legs and feet function very much like a human's. Whereas, and also the tracks they leave are, you know, look like giant, kind of weird, big human feet. Whereas if they're close enough to see the legs on a Dogman or an upright wolf-like creature, they'll always say something like, well, it was walking along on its toes and the legs were bent backwards. And by that they mean that the hock or heel and ankle joint is up in the air where we're expecting to see a knee come bending forward. It's really their heel and ankle joint up off, you know, up in the air, off the ground. So that is the big difference there. That they
so
see
they,
and that
they do leave paw prints then as opposed to human-like footprints.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a canine-looking print. You see claw marks if you're able to be that close to it. And it's sometimes that hock mark will show up if it's like bending back to spring forward, or is maybe walking in very soft mud where it's sort of sinking, you know. And imagine if your dog, I mean, it's a good way to look at it. If your dog is begging for treats and it kind of sits back a little bit, you know, then you can see that joint will hit the floor too. They won't always be on their toe pads. But it's a very different looking walk between the flat foot the canine sort of toe-pad walking. So, and it's very, very hard for a human to duplicate that as well. So it's a lot harder I'll just finish this real quick, to be a dog man in a fursuit than a Bigfoot in a fursuit, in my opinion.
And the prints would be larger than an average canine of any sort? Would that also be true? Do they measure larger? I'm not sure the difference between, say, a domesticated dog, coyote, wolf. I mean, I would assume that they're somewhat in the general same size.
Yeah, they're generally a little bit bigger, you know, and the witnesses bear this out by saying they have sort of elongated-looking front and back paws, and they're generally a little bigger than a very large wolf. So anywhere between 4.5 to 6 inches are ones that I've measured. And an average gray wolf would probably be around 4 inches, something like that. And there are a few differences, too. The wolf prints, the wolf's chest is narrower, and so the tracks are going to be closer together, and they'll often kind of walk in the same track as they go along, which makes it even weirder. And the dog prints are usually going to be a little bit longer and a little bit smaller. Even for a very big species of dog, the paw print will be smaller than a comparable wolf print.
Yeah. Okay. I found some dog prints in the mud that measured almost 6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
In a park not too far from here. I mean, I'm pretty positive they were dog. There's a rare chance it could have been a wolf, but I think that's another factor is mud and snow can sometimes make them appear a lot bigger.
Yeah, they can spread. You know, there's right, exactly. Yeah, the you have to always look at what they're in, and a good way to tell is if you can find other animal prints that you know the size of and compare them to those. Like, for instance, another incident that happened near Milwaukee, it was south of Milwaukee, maybe 7 years ago, something like that, where these four teenagers were sort of chased from a cornfield in south Milwaukee, and I was able to get there within a few days, and we walked back in to a tractor lane, and there was an area of mud. It had rained really recently, and it was just like looking at a little thing from National Geographic, because you could see exactly where this deer had walked in, and then where it was surprised, all of a sudden, its hoofs, back hoofs went way down, and you could see where it sprang out, and right behind it were these very large canine prints, and I've got pictures of them, and I'm thinking they were five or six inches. I don't have it right in front of me. I can't remember. But the thing was, the deer hoofs had not spread out. They were the perfect exact size that a deer hoof should have been. And the mud was not super gushy. It was fairly firm. So there's no reason to think that those would have spread. But I've seen other cases where the mud is really all mushy, and especially if it rains again in between, it can spread them out even further.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of those casts from Michigan, those dogman casts?
I'm not sure.
Those are the only real
about.
Confirmed tracks that have been casted, aren't they?
Of
a dogman, allegedly.
Well, I'm still not sure exactly which ones you're talking about, or which site you saw.
You
them.
Might have them on your website, or I know I've seen them
if
around.
If they're on
there.
My website. If they're on my website, those are the ones. They weren't casted. They were just I just took photos of them. But they are on one of my websites. Yeah, I think they're on the old beastbrayroad.com, which is static. But there've been and I've taken some casts here and there. Mine haven't turned out too well lately. They're just not always in the good. But there I think now that you mention it, I think I've seen some pretty good looking ones from Michigan too. But they weren't. You know, I don't personally possess any really good casts of dogman footprints.
Yeah, I know it's really rare. I think I have it somewhere
not for
on
lack
my blog.
Of trying. Mm-hmm.
I just don't know exactly where. I just remember seeing those, and I thought they were sent kind of to the DNR, and the DNR couldn't identify them as a known species, but I can't, not sure exactly where. I know I have them somewhere, but pictures, but
sure.
Interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, could very well be. And Michigan, you know, is very well known for sightings of these creatures, too, so.
Yep, okay, let's see, I found the on the link here, it's a, yeah, they're pretty big. They're like 5 inches across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty typical. 5 to 6 inches. I'm pretty sure those ones in South Milwaukee were almost 6 inches.
I'll throw a link to it in the chat room. Yeah, that's I mean, you don't really find much evidence of any cryptid, really, you know.
It's very, and when you do, it sort of melts away like the dew, you know. It's just gone before you know it, or it gets taken, or it gets confiscated, let's say. It just never seems to pan out to something that can be verified, which, again, is very frustrating.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. Well, we're reaching the top of the hour here, so we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back. More Linda Godfrey. We'll be right back. right, we're back. Before we get back to the discussion at hand, I'd just like to take a minute to thank a few of our friends and sponsors. First off, I'd like to thank Sasquatch Coffee. Have you tried it, Yeti? It is really great stuff, and you can even have it delivered to your door. Just visit SquatchCoffee.com to see their assortment of different coffees. I think they have 7 varieties. And they got cool T-shirts, mugs, all sorts of stuff. And I'd like to thank Bigfoot Research News for bringing us the news. I'd like to thank Paul E. for making the show intro and some of the banners. Okay, we're back. More with Linda Godfrey, the expert on Dogman, the cryptozoologist. One of the, have to be the, you're the godmother of the dog man, huh?
Well, am I supposed to respond to that? That's pretty weird. That's the first time I've heard that one. That's fun. And, you know, I am reluctant to call myself an expert because when the thing is unknown, you know, and I certainly don't feel I know exactly what it is, I may be one of the best-known investigators of it, you know, you could say that, but I really don't consider myself an expert because I don't know what it is. It's been 22 years, and I still can't point to it and say, yes, let me show you all the features of this creature because it just hasn't worked out that way. So, and to be an expert, there's, of course, it's semantics, and people will argue back and forth, but I thank you anyway for saying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would like to say Real Wolfman is a great book. I'm just finishing it up.
Thank you.
I'd like to say it's your crowning achievement, but apparently you got a new book that just came out. That sounds very exciting, which... I'm definitely going to have to get that one now, too, American Monsters.
Right, right. It's a history of monster lore, legends, and sightings in America. And I wanted to do a book like this that took a broader look because, for one, as I mentioned earlier, people have been sending me other types of sightings right from the get-go, not just Bigfoot, but the large birds, and, you know, we had the man bat and the cross, and all kinds of weird and unidentifiable things. And I got to put some of them in my Monsters of Wisconsin book, but they aren't all in Wisconsin either. And I think that the general public, and I tried to make this a book that both the general public and people who are in the field would enjoy, you know, something for both. But I don't think the general public is aware of how many different types of unknown creatures are seen around the Americas and how widespread it is, how weird they are, and really there are just so many more than anyone would think. I think it should be sort of an eye-opener. And what I did was I laid them out, creatures that appear in the air, in the sea, and on the land, although it's really hard to categorize some of these things. You have to just guess because, you know, maybe they've got wings and fins, and you don't know which place to put them. But that was my idea. I wanted to show the depth and the breadth of monsters.
So you stepped outside of Wisconsin for this one.
Oh yeah, this is totally. It's published by Torture Penguin, and when I say the Americas, I mean, it covers mostly the United States, but also Canada. We get into some things in the Bahamas, and you know, I go a little farther afield when I need to make comparisons, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's an entirely national sort of focus.
Yeah, I saw you just did a news article, and you listed the top 10 scary cryptids,
7 of the scariest. Doesn't mean they are the scary. It was really hard to pick out 7, too. And I was really tempted to put the dog man in, but I didn't because, again, I wanted people to know and understand that this was not another, although he's got a chapter in there, But I wanted people to know and understand that this was not just about the upright canids, that it covered so many other categories.
Okay, yeah, because I noticed some people were, they were a little upset that what Dog Man or certain ones weren't in there.
Yeah, well, yeah, like how could you ignore the Dog Man? Or, and I knew that would happen. I knew everybody would have their quote-unquote pet monster that they would want in there. And but, you know, really, how can you say a Dog Man is scarier than an upright alligator following you around in a swamp, you know, and attacking your boat and stuff? I mean, that to me is pretty creepy. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think goat men are really scary. I mean, maybe they just sort of look satanic because they have the horns and everything, but I just find them extremely, extremely weird and creepy. So, you know, no matter what I put in there, I knew people were going to say, why didn't you put this one in? So I just kind of went for a good variety in the list was really what I was looking for.
Was that in the Huffington Post? Or?
Yeah, they asked me to do a guest blog for Huffington Post. And there's also an article coming up that was more of an interview of me and a review of the book that will be in or on the CNN.com site possibly next weekend. It got preempted with some of the other world events and the gentleman that's writing the book, John Blake, I think is his name. So it was supposed to be in last week, but it got stuck behind for a week. So watch CNN.com toward the end of next week, and that's when the article is supposed to be on American Monsters in CNN.
Sweet. How exciting. Another new book.
Yeah, I was pretty happy. This one, you know, it took a while. It was, it took a good full 2 years from the time I had begun it before that, so probably over 2 years. Before it was published. So I was really, really glad to see that baby get out the door.
Nice. That's awesome. Is it about the same length as Real Wolfman?
I think it maybe even has a few more pages. It's pretty thick
pages.
For paperback. I think it's like 374 pages, something like that.
Okay, nice.
And even then,
yeah.
I was hard put to get everything in there. I mean, there were things I had to leave out. And again, I'm sure people are going to be saying, well, why did she put in this and that and that? And, you know, you just have to at some point make the hard picks. And generally it comes out to what I feel I have the best research on and then what is the most complementary to the book as a whole.
Yeah, I'll have to say, Real Wolfman just gets better and better as it goes, and it just really makes me look at things objectively now. You know, I mean, I think everyone wants to put things in a box, and everyone has or a certain belief that the Dog Man is this or the Dog Man is that, but, you know, I'm a lot more open after reading that book.
Oh, great. Yeah, and that's, you know, I really think, for me, that's what it's all about is staying open-minded to the different possibilities because, you know, unless you do have that final proof shot or you've got the specimen of the creature, you know, in a cage sitting on the White House lawn for everybody to see, you don't know what it is. And as soon as you say, okay, well, I know it is definitely this, then you've stopped investigating and all you're basically doing is working to support your own biases. And that usually just leaves you down, you know, a single narrow road, and you might miss the discovery of the century that's right under your nose because, you know, you've shut your mind to that possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon, and it's not just Wisconsin and Michigan like I originally thought. It's kind of like growing up, you just think Bigfoot's the Pacific Northwest. You know, as you get older and see all these shows on the internet, you realize, well, there's sightings in all 49 states.
Right,
I don't know if the
Dog
Man is in all 50 states, but it's more than just Wisconsin and Michigan, apparently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bigfoot and Dog Man alike. I have many, many, many sightings across the United States. I've been getting more and more in California and Oklahoma. I think if more people there become aware that somebody has been collecting these stories and putting them together, I think that's the big difference. I think the sightings have been there all along, but there just wasn't the awareness of where to report them. I mean, people have known to go to the BFRO website or other places to report Bigfoot for a long time, but the dogman thing has just been lesser known. And I do think that there are more sightings east of the Mississippi than west, perhaps because there are more forested areas, the types of areas that wolf-like creatures would prefer. So they've got more habitat. But I've been also getting lots more sightings from British Columbia and around Alberta and other parts of Canada as well.
Yeah, it was Lauren Coleman quoted as saying, where forests and farms meet, you find the dog man.
That's true. That's really very true. Although it's not the only place. I mean, as demonstrated, they can land in towns, and they can also be out in the wilderness, too. I've had people encounter them on very lonely national trails in Canada. So they can be really just about any place, but they're main habitat that they seem to like is, you know, the forests and the farmland. So, and I think that's because there are deer. You know, the deer follow the cornfields and hide in the woods, that sort of thing. And both the Bigfoot and the Dogman seem attracted to wherever the deer go.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, that makes sense for the Dogman anyway. You know, it's like the Bray Road. It's kind of the Bluff Creek of Dogman.
Except there's no video.
Yeah.
Sadly, or film. It wasn't a video. It was, you know, the film strip, to be technically correct. But, yeah, it would be nice if we had the Dogman Patty. But I don't know if how well that's going to happen. But,
well,
you know, I there are lots of new developments with trail cams and with ever miniaturized personal cameras, you know, the ones that are on your glasses that you just, all you have to do is tap with your finger. It takes all that business of having to pick up a camera, turn, even if you're just using your cell phone, you have to, you know, turn it to the right mode, focus it. Whereas if it's on your glasses, you're already looking right at it. You tap it, the picture's there. Drones, small drones. I think that if they're silent enough, could do very well at sneaking up over certain habitats and taking pictures of what's there, you know. And then they're making different types of trail cams, some with laser lights, so you don't have the problems with the infrared. And I'm hoping that technical advances will maybe help some of these people.
Did you hear that Wisconsin is starting the world's largest trail cam project?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's going to be a public thing. I think it's funded somewhat by the state,
probably.
It's to document wildlife, and there's going to be a database online that everyone can put their pictures on and things. I did a blog write-up on it a while ago, but it seems like it's going to be a really neat deal, and it's the
that
kind
is
of the
cool.
First thing of its kind here in the U.S. to get a, and it's, you know, there's some people that think, you know, there's a, like, government cover-ups of, you know, these creatures and things. So this should be interesting because it's allowing the public to be a part of it and upload to this site.
Well, and, you know, and I don't know if there's a government cover-up, but it does seem that what I do know is that a lot of people, when they get up the nerve to call the police and say, I saw a Bigfoot or I saw a dog man, they're very often either ignored or ridiculed. That's what happened to Steve Kruger on Holy Hill. He went to the authorities, and they kind of chuckled in his face and wrote it in the, even though he said it had, you know, the wolf-like head, they wrote down Yeti, which shows a person with no knowledge whatsoever of the field because, you know, the Yetis aren't in the Americas. And so he wrote down Yeti, and so when the police log went out, the newspapers all saw that and wrote Bigfoot, translated it to Bigfoot. So it came out in the papers. It's a Bigfoot sighting when he's extremely insistent that it wasn't anything of the kind. And the interesting thing with this recent Harland one is that the woman who saw the creature in her backyard also called the police, and the policeman said, "I believe you." And when she asked him, yes, because you don't usually hear that. When she asked him if there had been other calls, he didn't answer her. He wouldn't say anything. So, yeah. So I do think there are probably some really understandable reasons as to why your local law enforcement wouldn't be too eager to have this get known. For one thing, if a lot of people, let's say they see something on Podunk Road and it ends up in the paper, well, I'll guarantee you that you're going to have hundreds of people driving down Podunk Road, some of them with the windows rolled down and rifles sticking out, because literally that's what happens in some cases. And then you've got the sheriff's department or the police has to go and handle that mess. And then you've got people complaining about trespassing, and it just creates, you know, sort of a logistical nightmare in a lot of places. So it's understandable that they don't want to fan the flames, but back in 1992, when I did the story on it, they were calling the animal control officer. That's who they were reporting to at that time. And I thought, well, enough people have seen something consistently like a large wolf-type creature that perhaps, you know, I wasn't thinking anything like werewolf at the time, but I was thinking, if there's a large predator out there, people have the right to know so they can lock up the pets and the children. You know, it's something that citizens have a right to be aware of what's around them. So that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to write that original story.
Yeah, they don't like us to know about mountain lions, cougars around here either.
No.
That's a last-minute thing. It'll make it on the news if someone calls and actually sees one, because we had one reported here years back in the suburbs of Minneapolis, and I think there might have been one by Stillwater, by the river there.
Yes.
So
there was.
It's kind of creepy because you go to these parks and you think, wow, there was a mountain lion here. There's so many people.
I mean, literally, we had one in my backyard last October. My husband walked out. We've got woods and some of those kettle formations right alongside our yard. And my husband walked back to his boat at night. And being an old farm boy, he didn't even take a flashlight. And all of a sudden, this thing was yowling at him and took a jump and landed like 2 or 3 feet right in front of him. And he had to walk backwards to the house, flailing his arms and kicking at it, you know, to keep it from jumping it. I mean, and he was, and I actually, when this was happening, I was sitting on it talking to somebody on a radio show. So he could have been totally killed, and I wouldn't have had any clue. I had headphones on and everything, and I came out finally of my office, and he's standing there white as a sheet, just terrified. And my husband is not, I mean, he's a deer hunter. He hunts all kinds of things. He used to go through cornfields at night, you know, shooting raccoons in the dark. So, I mean, he's not normally somebody who scares as easily, but he saw it the next morning, too. Right in our neighborhood, and two of our neighbors also saw it, so it's not like it was one mistaken thing. And this is southeastern Wisconsin, you know, where maybe some order. And there it is. And actually, if you remember 5 years ago, there was a mountain lion or cougar that was shot downtown Chicago, and that one was verified through DNA as having come within 5 miles of where I live.
I'll be dang.
So,
are they coming from the Black Hills?
Yes, that's what most of the reports say that.
Wow, that's got to be a stealthy journey crossing those plains all the way through South Dakota and Minnesota.
And yet they find enough cover that thing wasn't seen until it made it to downtown Chicago. It had to go through all the Chicago suburbs. And just imagine, you know, it's creeping around Skokie and, you know, all of these spots until it gets right in the city, and then unfortunately is, you know, in too densely populated an area to be there safely and has to end its life with a pop. So it's kind of creepy. But if you think these creatures can get around without being seen, well, why can't other sorts of cryptids or other sorts of animals that we consider cryptids is more accurate?
Yeah, very true.
And the dogman also has the advantage that it is not limited to walking and running on its hind legs. It can go on all fours whenever it wants to. And many witnesses have seen it either in the beginning on all fours and then it rises up and runs off or vice versa. So when it's just on all fours, you're not sure if that's just some big wolf or some kind of super weird wolf-dog hybrid. And there are now, there was a really good special recently, I don't know if it was on Nat Geo or PBS, about coy wolves, which is the new urban breed of coyotes that have bred with wolves. And so they get a lot of the wolves' intelligence and ferocity and the coyote's sneakiness, and you've got these really well-suited to urban life animals that are totally fearless. And they put collars on them and followed around at night, and they showed them going right up to people's front doors, and the people, you can see them in the windows, and these animals are there, and they never see them. They're at the trash cans, and they're traipsing right through the neighborhood, and nobody has a look at them. Of course, none of these were on their hind legs, but still, it was pretty interesting to watch.
Hmm. Yeah, I know that report I took from Kansas. It was on four legs. It was on two legs. It did a little bit of both,
mm-hmm.
but...
Right.
It definitely shocked
right.
the guy because he'd never seen anything like
yep.
it. And
nobody usually ever has. Yeah, it's definitely a shock. And you know, so many people tell me they kind of wish they hadn't seen it in most cases. For those of you who are just craving for a sighting of one of these, you know, be careful in case you get what you wish for, because many people, even though it's not even so much the fact that they were afraid it was going to eat them or something, as that they saw something they knew should not exist, and yet it did. And so that makes you stop and evaluate your whole worldview. Are there other things that aren't supposed to exist that do? You know, it's a paradigm changer. And that's in many cases what scares people the most.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Everyone wants to see one, but when it actually happens, it's going to be a life changer. And a lot of these
people say.
They're just not looking for fame or fortune
from this.
They just want to be heard and want answers.
Right. Right. You know, like I was, there's a woman I've been interviewing about some Bigfoot interactions that she had when she was younger and never told anybody because the one or two people she tried to tell immediately told her she was crazy. And she said, I just really wanted to talk to somebody who would know I wasn't crazy. And I hear that over and over about the dog man too. You know, people, they want some sort of verification and closure just to know that other people have experienced the same thing that they did, that they're not alone in this, that it wasn't some sort of crazy one-off hallucination.
Yeah, because you get your fair share of Bigfoot reports down there. And, I mean, for people that don't know southern Wisconsin or southeastern Wisconsin in particular, it's, you know, a lot of towns, farms, but there are some forests mixed in there. So, I mean, Bigfoot's going to kind of have to play hopscotch, you know, to survive there. I don't know.
Yeah, hopscotch is good.
If you could really have a large breeding population, per se, like you might be able to have in northern Wisconsin, at least in my theoretic opinion, of
I think there's
being
a small
through southern
breeding
Wisconsin.
Population. Yeah, I think there's a small breeding population. I really do. I've had people who saw young ones, you know, in groups that look like families. I had one woman tell me that they raised chickens, and there was an area out behind their lot line where they would, when they had chicken slaughter, they would throw the carcasses back there. And she said in the winter, a couple of times she saw a small group of Bigfoot come up, and one of them that looked like a female was carrying a young one. and set it down in the snow while it gathered up the carcasses it wanted, and then picked it back up with one arm and walked off. You know, so you've got things that are being opportunistic about finding farm animals, and yes, pets, dogs, and cats. I've had reports like that too. In fact, I've got a really poignant story of this was up in the northern Kettle Moraine, of a man and his at that time fiance, who were driving around not that far from Holy Hill, and saw a Bigfoot. It was sometimes when you see them, they freeze into position, and that's what this one had done. It was at the end of a driveway, and it had its arms outstretched, and it was holding a dead black and white dog in its arms. And they just drove by real slow, and then the girlfriend said, no, he wanted to go back, and she said, no, speed up, speed up. And they both felt that it had sort of a sad expression on its face. You know, it was hard for them to interpret. But I've had reports of both, or of the three main different colors, the dark, almost black, shaggy ones, the cinnamon-colored, and then the blonde ones with the gray and beige mix of fur. So, and a lot of the sightings that I've had reported to me, and I've got, well, it keeps growing, over 20 over since the 1960s, just in the vicinity of Walworth and Jefferson counties alone. A lot of them are extremely credible people, daylight in many cases, or right at twilight, you know, not pitch black or anything like that. They get real good looks at them. The creatures are doing things. They're not just, you know, stuck in one spot. They're running up a ditch to get out of the way, or they're striding along toward a lake or that kind of thing. So there's been a real solid presence. Plus, along part of the Kettle Moraine, there were legends for years that I've learned about, that people called it the Bluff Monster, because there are bluffs along parts of these Kettle Moraine formations. And it was, every description is pure Bigfoot.
Yeah, that seems like an area that's ripe for the picking, huh, for Bigfoot and Dogman.
Yeah, I think it's mostly, especially in the southern Kettle Moraine, I think it's mostly Bigfoot right around the kettles, and then the Dogman is sort of encroaching on the surrounding areas where it is the more farm and forest things, but they sort of mix. You know, it's not a fixed boundary by any means. But I can kind of draw a line and say most things here are going to be the Bigfoot and most things here are going to be the Dogman, because I map out the sightings, you know, and look and try and analyze where they are and where they're going and who's where. And the reason that I think the Bigfoot like these kettles is, for anybody who's not familiar with what they are and why they're called kettles, they were left courtesy of the last glacier. The glacier stopped there. And all these lobes of ice that were pushing through and kind of turning over the topsoil stopped with all these little round depressions that are steep-sided, like, you know, the old-style kettles that would hang over a fire or a campfire, not a gradually slope, but a steep slope and then a rounded bottom. That's what these are. And that's one reason people don't go down in them. They can be very hard to get down into. It's very thin soil with a layer of rock underneath it, so it's slippery too. And then you get down there and there's brambles and all kinds of overgrowth, plants that are hard to find anywhere else too. And there's swamps. There's all kinds of swamps around them with water plants and that sort of thing. So it really makes an ideal habitat for the Bigfoot, which seem to like sloped areas.
And they do open that area up to hunting, I see, part of it anyway.
Part of it, right, yeah.
Which has to be scary for a Bigfoot.
Yeah, I think they just lie low. I think they lie low and they know where to go, where the hunting isn't, and they have their hiding places in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they're as smart as we think they are and they've made it till 2014 without being discovered, they can probably sense us coming a long ways before we can sense them.
I'm sure they have much, much better senses.
I was just doing some research on that area, and I saw that they did have opened up hunting in there, and except not in the campground areas and things.
Right, right. Yeah, and people do see them occasionally around the campgrounds, and not only just in the park, but you can tell where they sort of go out and make forays into the countryside to get to a particular swamp or something that's attracting them in a certain area, berry bushes, whatever it is. And there are lots of berry bushes around here, too. It's a very good habitat for a smaller population that's very careful and cautious, and that's what I think there is around here. But, I mean, right from the beginning, I mean, I know some of these people who've had very close-up encounters. One middle-aged couple that I know, they were actually in the first Monster Quest that purported to be about Dogman, but somehow they were put in there with the Bigfoot sighting, although if you watch the show, you can't. They never say that. But they saw, they had stopped on a bridge, and the Bigfoot was 10 feet in front of them on the bridge, full in their spotlights of their car. And it was right there looking at them, making eye contact, maybe not even 10 feet away. And they watched it slowly turn and put its hand on the bridge and then kind of vault over with its feet together. And he said they were hands, not paws. They were definite hands. And, you know, they drew me a sketch of it, and it was totally Bigfoot. No neck, you know, the fur, you couldn't see the ears, it had the flat feet. But it dropped about 15 to 20 feet to the creek bed below and then presumably ran off down the creek bed in the darkness.
Yeah, and they also had that younger guy, right, on the Monster Quest who saw the one in the graveyard by Lake Geneva.
Right.
Wasn't that a Bigfoot as well? But they kind of tied into the Dogman.
Yeah, well, I think maybe they were trying to save money on the animated part, you know, where they always had an animated creature. And so what they ended up with was sort of a cross between a Bigfoot and a Dogman, which didn't work for either one. But, yeah, Blakely, I think was his last name, on White Pigeon Road and B, right on the Illinois-Wisconsin border almost, saw this. He thought it looked like a caveman at first, was his first reaction. But he saw it with it actually standing with one foot up on a gravestone, which would be you'd have to be a pretty tall person to be able to manage what it was doing, because he showed us the gravestone, you know, and it was hard for only the tallest men could even manage it. And then they couldn't stand there as casually as he said this one was. And it just watched him. It was near the corner, intersection of those two roads, and he had to make that turn, and he said it just watched him, turned its head, and watched him go by the whole time.
Hmm.
That
wow.
one was the one I helped him out and did my own forensic sketch with him participating, and it had this kind of wild-looking hairdo, and it got called the Wild Hair Day, or the Bad Hair Day Bigfoot.
That's awesome, and he passed a polygraph as well, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, flying colors. Yep, definitely.
I've been through that area. I've been to Lake Geneva, and you know, you got Bigfoot Beach State Park there. And
well, not named after the animal. That's named after the last Potawatomi chieftain that lived on Lake Geneva, that encamped on Lake Geneva. And he was called Bigfoot. He got a nicknamed Bigfoot because he made footprints that they were made in mud and spread out to look real large, and so he got this sort of humorous nickname, Bigfoot. But,
That's funny.
Have Bigfoot High School and the town of Bigfoot. And
you know,
people call me all the time. Go ahead.
It's kind of spooky driving through there at night. You know, before I was really even into all this to the degree I am now, I drove through there real late at night, and it is kind of spooky. When you get on those open, dark farm roads and
that's true.
Woods around there, it's got a creepy feel to it.
There's always a tree line, or sometimes there'll be a bunch of trees right up by the road, or cornfields, which I call creature corridors or creature highways, because anything can get around in those. You know, I think that's really when they all have their heyday, because the prey animals, the deer and the raccoons and things, are in there eating the corn, and then the predator animals can run around and probably catch their fill of the prey animals. Plus, they can get around without being seen in places where it would be hard to do that without the cornfields.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing that so much goes on in that area.
It is.
Lake monster lore of Lake Geneva as well, and
right.
And the bat squatch is that's on the other side of Wisconsin, isn't it?
Yeah, that's over by La Crosse.
Okay.
And that's you know, like you say, more like the bat squatches, with the bat like wings and then a furry hominid center and very large.
Yeah, I think those. How about the North Kettle Moraine? Does that get some action too?
Oh yeah. Well, that's, you know, the Holy Hill area is in the Northern Kettle Moraine.
Oh, okay.
And that it also, and the northern one is especially known for UFO sightings as well. You know, one of the Wisconsin's three UFO capitals is Dundee, which is right up there in that Northern Kettle Moraine. And oftentimes the Bigfoot and Dogman sightings are sort of in those same areas where you see the UFOs. So it's kind of like John Keel's window area in many ways. I keep finding that over and over. I can't help it. And I have a sketch of my interpretation of the window area in the opening section of the American Monsters book. But they do seem to kind of go hand in hand. Oftentimes where you find one, you find the other anomalies.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, a lot of people don't want to hear that. So
no,
it seems,
but
like,
it's the inconvenient truth.
True.
You know, I mean, yeah, if you start mapping it out, you just, some spots are just unusually gifted with these things.
Yeah, and I understand how people want to go through science, you know, and try and prove these things, and you do kind of get laughed at the more obscure and outlandish some of the theories go, with cloaking and interdimensional and this and that. But, you know, we just don't know what they are, and science
right.
is willing to listen. I mean, you know, Todd Dissitl from Bigfoot Bounty, Stacey
mm-hmm.
Brown's working with him, and there are certain, you know, science is starting to get involved, and they if we can produce the evidence, we can get results.
Right,
you know.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, we just have to keep trying, and I just believe that there's a lot more to the universe than we little humans have figured out yet.
Mm-hmm. And those correlations are interesting with the effigy mounds and the dogman sightings, and there is some Native American lore with the dogman, huh? As far as they like skinwalkers and. What's the Luguru, or, you know, different, it kind of goes
well,
back
Luguru,
into their culture as well, huh?
Yeah, the Luguru kind of comes from the French and the French Cajuns, that it's actually French, you know, for the French term for werewolf. And it,
oh, okay.
if you find Luguru stories, they're probably going to sound a lot like the European werewolf, which is a lot more traditional, where you have the human being just changing into, you know, putting on the wolf pelt and then changing form, doing, you know, magic rituals and that kind of thing. But there are other Native American traditions that are very different, really, that in which there's no human involved. That and I've heard this from several different tribal elders that I've interviewed, from and so not that all Native Americans believe the same thing, far from it, but many of the ones I've talked to believe that a lot of the dogman sightings, most of these ones where it's not doing anything but running around catching deer, that these are very ancient manifestations of some kind of spirit animal that when it's here in this, that can go back and forth between this world and the spirit world, or maybe some people would call that another dimensional world, whatever. You know, science would have a different term for it. But when they're here, they're fully corporeal, and they need to eat, and they need to, you know, get energy like anything else, and they can leave tracks, but that eventually they can go back to where they came from, and that they have their own business here, and they're not any sort of thing like a human changing into an animal. It's pure, pure spirit mocking or taking the form of these wolf-like creatures.
So many different theories and speculation, and yeah, it's just part of the whole mystery.
Right. And speculation is a good and important word, and I often will, you know, when I'm talking about these theories, I'll often stop and make the point, just to be clear, it's only I'm only speculating, I'm not putting forth any one theory, because, you know, I sure don't know which one is right, but it does appear to me that, you know, well, in the 90% or more of the reports that I get could be in that category that I just mentioned, that is some kind of different creature that is real when it's here, or is an adaptive wolf species of some kind, where, you know, and really, if you think about it, if the only changes are elongated paws, that's really not a very big adaptation for one species to make. You know, it doesn't even make it another species. It just makes it an adaptation within, you know, the wolves or the canines that do it.
There is stories of them kind of using their paws as hands,
mm-hmm.
more so than a regular canine would do.
Right, and you can see how that would happen if you're walking on your hind legs. All of a sudden, you've got these two limbs hanging there, good for nothing. You might as well start using them to scoop up water, or you know, drag away a prey on your shoulder rather than having to drag it with your mouth on the ground, and everything can be taking it away from you, and you're sort of helpless. It just makes everything much. Plus, you're standing up, you can see other things coming towards you. You can see if there's other danger. I can think of a lot of advantages, particularly if they started back when this was all prairie and you had these tall prairie grasses. They probably needed to stand up once in a while to see what was coming, and found that that was a very good way to do things. And perhaps those that had naturally longer paws found they were the best at it and would have passed that trait on to their offspring, and you know, maybe taught them a little bit about it as well, because wolves do teach their young hunting methodology and things like that. That's been proven in studies. So there are a lot of different ways to look at it, lots of different possibilities. All I know is that people seem to keep seeing them.
Mm-hmm. And it's great that they are able to find you and get these documented and
usually
researched.
You know, and I do try and weed out. I mean, not all sightings are created equal. Some are more credible than others. Some people are more credible than others. Some people are nicer than others. But by and large, it's kind of an amazing amount of reports that I've gotten over 22 years. It's been that long, and I still will average, you know, 1 to 3 a week year-round.
Wow.
Sometimes more. Sometimes.
And do they contact you through your website?
Still collecting them. Usually, right. But, you know, back in 1992, people didn't have email or websites to speak of. You know, you were pretty advanced if you had anything like email in those days. And people had to find me via snail mail or hunt down the newspaper's phone, and they still did it.
Wow.
But now it's, of course, it's much easier, you know, to find. You just find on Facebook or my website, and it's much easier than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's helping the collaboration of data between different researchers and groups, and
Right, and there are more people. I mean, for a lot, I'll just say this real quick because I like to get some kudos into people. For a long time, I was the only person really collecting any great number of what I call the contemporary upright canine sightings. And now you've got people like Lon Strickler with his, you know, Phantoms and Monsters, and you've got Stan Gordon out in Pennsylvania, and other people who are starting to amass vast databases too. So it's not just me anymore, and I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, we got Brian Siege. I got my DFRO page.
Exactly.
All searching for answers, but following our leader, Linda.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that, but I mean, there's just some very skilled people out there, and I think the more the merrier. You know, it's whoever somebody feels comfortable talking to and trusts, that's who you should go to, and no one person can handle it all. I'm convinced of that. I mean, I'm very stretched to my limits. I'm stretched to my limits as it is right now, and you know, I wish I had minions, but I don't. It's just me.
Yeah, it's just so intriguing. It really interests me, I think, because I've been through that area so much. You when I was younger, and I'm just familiar with it, and you know, Wisconsin's like our sister state practically here. So it's and I just branch out from Bigfoot, you know, get into something different, and it's another thing. A lot of people laugh at Dogman. They're like, "Oh, Dogman, there's no such thing as Dogman. Was it a human and a dog mixed?" You know, they don't really know about it, but no, there's people are seeing something just like Bigfoot. And
right, and once they educate themselves, they'll be surprised, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's people who say, "Oh, well, the werewolf word is one that gets used in my book titles because the publishers like it, you know." But
yeah.
That also brings it some ridicule. It's easier to ridicule a werewolf, you know, than it is to say, "Well, a bipedal canine," because you can go on YouTube and find bipedal canines. It's not an impossible thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. It's interesting that it's all over. My main focus is Wisconsin, but I'll take reports from wherever if someone's got them and look into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you're getting them too. It's terrific. And hopefully it'd be nice if we had a database everybody could feed into, and that it was comparative. That's sort of my dream. I don't know how that would ever get accomplished, but that would be very cool someday for all of the Bigfoot and for the Dogman, you know. And I really think if you start studying, what I like to say, it's like the old potato chip commercial, where they say nobody can eat just one, nobody can study just one when it comes to cryptids. If you are into one, sooner or later you're going to run into the other one.
Yeah. Yeah, what did Crystal say? It's Bigfoot's the gateway drug.
Oh. Right.
And then it opens the door.
That's very funny.
All the other sorts of stuff. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I know right now you're riding the wave of your new book, and obviously you can find it on Amazon, your website. What's the best place to find your new book?
Well, it is on Amazon and Kindle. You can go to lindagodfrey.com, and my book section on the About page has a link to the publisher's site, and of course, and all of the online booksellers should have it. So, and I see people are already trying to scalp copies for two or three times the normal price, which is kind of crazy. There's plenty of them to go around at this point, so you know, don't be afraid to look around for the best price.
Yeah, I got a really good deal on Real Wolfman on eBay.
There you go. Yeah, and more power to you if you can do that. And just get a note to me, because if you want to do another show, if you need a review copy of American Monsters, I can make that happen for you. So.
Very nice. Yeah, this real Wolfman just got better and better as it as I got into it. So what's,
thank you.
What's next on the horizon then? Or obviously you're going to, like I said, you're going to ride this wave for a while, but you got anything else planned in the near future?
Well, I'm working on another proposal with my publisher, Tartar Penguin. And, you know, it's been under debate for a little while. I can't please just myself. I have to please them too and hopefully please a lot of people as well. So that's a little bit under wraps yet, but I'm working on something. We'll see. I also am working on, I've started writing fantasy fiction. I have, my first novel is available. It's called God Johnson, The Unforgiven Diary of the Disciple of a Lesser God. And it's about a group of kind of crazy gods who are still trying to get disciples. And there's one that takes on the looks of Abraham Lincoln because he thinks women will trust him more and become his disciple. And, of course, he finds one young woman who does and ends up regretting it. There are no werewolves. It's a werewolf-free book. I can say that. It does have sphinxes and other things. So I wanted to branch out a little bit in that one. But it's a lot of fun, and you can also find that one on lindagodfrey.com, too, and I'm about halfway through the sequel, so there will be a sequel to it. And that's self-published with my agent as an e-book. So you can get it as an e-book, and there are links to all the different e-book venues on the God Johnson page at lindagodfrey.com.
Okay.
Oh, and it's 99 cents. It's a celebration of American Monsters. It's 99 cents for the month of September. So, pretty
sweet.
Cheap.
Well,
yeah.
Well, thanks for joining.
Well, thanks for having me.
Again, Linda.
Sure, I'm just always pleased to be on your show, and thank you to all the listeners and everyone else who supports you, and I hope you keep getting the sightings, too.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I just had an artist named Dread Fun just did a DFRO, a rendition of a Dog Man.
Oh, cool.
He's going to do a video, too, of him drawing it.
Wonderful.
So I might be making that into a shirt or something.
That sounds terrific.
Trying to get the time and funds to get out there and do my own research.
Right, right. Well, just keep at it. I'm sure things will happen.
Yeah. Well, so everyone, if you want to check out our book, American Monsters, it's on Amazon, it's on our website. I'm sure it's great. And we'll talk to you soon, Linda.
Thanks so much. You take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great night.
And thanks to everyone in the chat room. Tigger Dog, Richard, Ramble, Terry, Salzberg, Cindy, all the guests. We'll see you next week for another episode of Monster X Radio.